What does it really take to thrive as an executive and a mom without burning out or giving everything to one side of your life? In today's episode, I sit down with Sarah Armstrong. She's the VP of Global Marketing Operations at Google and the author of the book, The Art of the Juggling Act, A Bite-Sized Guide for Working Parents. Sarah has built an incredible global career over the past several decades. She has raised a daughter while doing it, and she has been through the sleepless nights and the global travel and the guilt and the pressure to always do more. And she is here on the podcast today to share her wisdom that she has gathered along the way. We talk about setting boundaries without apologizing. We talk about replacing guilt and redefining what success looks like on your terms. If you've ever wondered how to be deeply present at home while still showing up fully in your executive career, or if you've questioned whether it's okay to prioritize your family for a while instead of that next promotion, then this conversation is for you. Are you ready? Let's get to it. Welcome to the Ambitious and Balanced Working Moms Podcast, your go-to resource for integrating your career ambitions with life as a mom. I'm distilling down thousands of coaching conversations I've had with working moms just like you, along with my own personal experience as a mom of two, and sharing the most effective tools and strategies to help you quickly feel calm, confident, and in control of your ambitious working mom life. You ready? Let's get to it. Hello, hello, working moms. I am so excited to have Sarah Armstrong here on the podcast today. Sarah is in global marketing, and she is the VP of Global Marketing Operations at Google. And she has a daughter, we were just talking about her, who is just about to graduate from college, which is so exciting. So she's got so many tips and wisdoms and strategies, and she's just come out with a book called The Art of the Juggling Act, Bite-Sized Guide for Working Parents. And oh my gosh, I just cannot wait to like tap into her wisdom. Thank you for being here, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Rebecca. So great to be here.
Yes, absolutely. So that, I mean, I just gave everybody your title and things like that. But tell us a little bit more about you. Tell us a little bit about how you came to write this book, a little bit about where you live, you know, all the details.
Great. So, well, I live in San Francisco. And as you mentioned, I have a 22-year-old daughter who's graduating this summer from college, which is crazy to think. But yeah. And I have worked in the corporate world for 30-plus years, everything from the agency side. And I spent about 20 years at the Coca-Cola company. And then I was partner at McKinsey. And then I joined Google 5 years ago to lead marketing operations. So I've had varying degrees of roles within the kind of global marketing space. And my role has always been global. Kind of had that as part of my juggling act. And
yeah, because then you're dealing with the time zones and everything related to that as well.
Oh my gosh. Every day, all day, absolutely. Yes, talking to people around the world, which I love, actually. It's really made me a citizen of the world in many ways. And what led me to write this book is I have reflected over the years on the fact that we go to school for so many things. We learn about all these topics in school.
Yeah.
But we actually don't learn about parenting in school.
Nope.
Right? And then we don't learn about how to manage our career in school. We learn about a topic we might want to pursue as a career, but the actual concept of managing our career, is not something that we really focus on. And then when you put those two things together, we don't learn about how to manage two of the most important aspects of our life that we're going to do all at once. And how do we do them in a healthy and happy way that can, where you feel like you're leading a fulfilling life. And I look around, Rebecca, and I'm really fortunate to work with amazing people at all the various companies and places that I've worked. But I've watched so many young parents that look like they're surviving and not thriving in this, what I call this juggling act. And so that's why I really decided to kind of write down these little bits of guidance and wisdom from over the years is because I really think that there's a way to reflect on how can you do this so you could be healthy, happy, your kids can be happy, and you can feel like you're really thriving in the day to day.
I love that. And your book is really written like that. It's like these literal like bite-sized ideas. And so it's not, you don't have to sit there and read chapters. You can just read a couple, pick and choose topics, which I also really love just the way you structured this book.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually joke that most working parents don't have time to read a book. That's not really, when is that going to happen? So it is written with bite-sized pieces. So there's about 140 topics. They're all just a paragraph or a page, and it's not meant to be read cover to cover. The table of contents has it all laid out, so you can just pick a topic, reflect on that one topic, and then set it aside till you want to take another one in.
I love it. And so I just really want to pick your brain. I mean, I know that I've said that to you, but it's like, yes. You are ahead of a lot of working moms that listen to this particular podcast. I would say, you know, the average person here that listens, the average mom has kids that are pretty young. And so you have so much to give us about having juggled that demanding career and life as a mom. And so I can't wait to hear some of that. When you think back about that experience as a mom and as an executive, like what are the things that come up? What are the memories? What are the moments?
You know, there's a lot of memories and moments. You know, I think one of the things that I reflect on is, you know, I loved my career and always did, but I loved being a mom. And so for me, it was like, how did those moments kind of come together? And, you know, one of the fun things for Grace and I is that, you know, because I was in this global role, I did travel a lot. And, you know, that global travel and, you know, being away and then coming back was a reality of our life. And I really loved those trips, but I also realized, you know, I was leaving Grace and my husband at the time, you know, to deal with the day to day. But, you know, I look back and I think, you know, she rolled with the fact that I, you know, mommy went away, mommy came back. And, you know, that was just part of the fabric of our life. And I feel so fortunate that I was able to do that type of travel and to manage that, but also that Grace was able to both appreciate the world in a different way. And also I had a lot of colleagues that would come in town from around the world and I'd have them over for dinner so that instead of going out to a business dinner, you know, and being away, I'd have them over. And so then she'd meet these individuals that, you know, she wouldn't have necessarily met otherwise from different cultures, different parts of the world. And so that's an example of, you know, a little bit of a tweak on, you know, you might need to do a business dinner, but it doesn't mean you have to actually, you know, go out. You can actually bring them into your home and actually expose your kids to, you know, your colleagues in a different way. So that was just an example that I felt was that helped me. So I wasn't always, you know, even when I was home, I had a lot of those dinners and I didn't have to necessarily be away.
Yeah, I love that. I have a lot of clients that I work with that do a lot of travel, and travel's a tough topic. You know, it's important in a lot when you reach a particular level in your career and it involves travel, like there isn't much you can do about that. Yet the amount of emotion that, you know, a young mom feels leaving her kid all the time, everywhere from the guilt to the anxiety to, you know, whatever it might be, it's very, very confusing. Did you go through a period of really feeling confused or conflicted, maybe is another word?
Yeah, you know, there are moments. I'd say overall, what I tried to say, first of all, guilt is, I grew up Catholic, so guilt is ingrained. But, you know, I think one of the things with guilt is we have to tell ourselves that there's a saying I told myself throughout time, which I'm doing the best I can. Okay. And the reason I told myself that is that was to help placate that guilt that we all feel about trying to be in two places at once, which is not physically possible. And so over the course of time, whether it was my travel or something I could or couldn't make at school, you know, I would say, look, I would tell myself and I'd say to Grace, I'm doing the best I can. So I think that's one of the things, whether it's, you know, the demands of travel or the demands of your schedule, that you really have to try to set that guilt. I should say set it guilt, really just manage the fact that guilt is not a healthy emotion for us if we're trying to do all of this. And really just give yourself that little boost of telling yourself, you know, I'm doing the best I can, replacing the feeling of guilt with that mantra or a mantra that gives you that energy of saying, you know, stay the course. You're doing what you're meant to be doing.
I sometimes like to, or a lot of times with my clients, when they start talking about guilt, I like to to differentiate, because I think sometimes we actually use the word guilt and we mean just like sadness. Like, it's sad to leave your daughter to go on a trip away from her. Like, you probably are never gonna not feel that sadness, but guilt is a like a twist on that sadness that says I'm doing it wrong because of this, right? And then you feel guilty, like it's somehow wrong. And I what I love about the phrase, you know, I'm doing the best I can, you're kind of reframing the away from this idea that there's something wrong that I'm doing with this because of the emotions, because she feels a certain way, because I feel a certain way. And you're saying, I'm doing the best I can. This is what it is.
Yes.
And it's okay. There's almost like this following point, and it's okay.
And it's okay. Yes. And that, yeah. You know, that comes back to expectations, right? And the expectations we set for ourselves, the expectations our kids have for us, and probably if you brought it out, the expectation society has for all of us, but especially women, in terms of how we're supposed to be to be managing all of this. So I do think expectations and that guilt emotion kind of go in an interesting parallel. And so I do think it's a matter of defining what those expectations should be, and then again using a mantra like I'm doing the best I can to really, you know, keep you focused on how you can meet those expectations realistically.
Yeah. I this is a really, and I know you have some bite-sized pieces on in your book on this too, mm-hmm. around expectations, because I think guilt is more prominent when you haven't set expectations, right? When you haven't told your brain, like, what really is important to you and why the things that you do matter. I can see your eyes. Tell me more.
Absolutely. It's just so important. Well, I mean, it comes down to one of the things that I think links to expectations is the boundaries you set in your life. And both, by the way, both for your personal life and professional life. And one of the things that I think we don't do enough of is really think about the boundaries that we want to set. And we might have that conversation with ourselves about boundaries, but the most important thing is to then share your boundaries with those around you, whether it's your coworkers or your spouse or your nanny or whoever's in your life that's helping you to, you know, understand what you're trying to manage here. And sometimes, because people can only respect boundaries that they know exist.
Yeah.
And if you don't share your boundaries, then people will walk right over them or walk on top of them. And you'll be upset because you said, well, I was trying to have this boundary, but you, again, no one can respect one that they don't know exists. So I think the most important thing is for you to think about the boundaries that you want to set, articulate them to those around you, and then ask them to help you in protecting and respecting those boundaries. And an example I have is, you know, on my work calendar throughout Grace's life, I blocked the evenings and I called it Grace time. Mm. And her name was Grace, but so but it was Grace time. And the reason that was important is because I was in a global role and people could ask to talk to you at any hour of the day. No, I would leave the office and for a couple hours of the evening, that was Grace's time. And no one could book a call during those hours. And I'd say to my assistant, you know, if someone would like to, please offer them, you know, so my Grace time was 6 to 8 p.m. No one could book a call. But if someone wants to talk to me at 8:30 or 9 p.m. or after carpool the next morning, sure, more than happy to. But I really tried to protect that time because our kids get so few hours of us in a given 24-hour period because of the schedules we all keep. And so I really felt that that was an important piece of the puzzle for me in terms of both setting and protecting my boundaries. And it really worked. I mean, I had very few instances over the course of Grace's life that I needed to take a call during those hours. So I didn't want her remembering mom, who was also, you know, very, you know, had a busy schedule for those few hours that she got that I was on a call or that I was on my laptop. That wasn't how I wanted her to associate, you know, mom.
Yeah. And, mom's always working.
Yeah. And actually physically too, Rebecca, when I walked in the house, I had a cupboard. I say find a cupboard. I had a cupboard that I put my tote that had my laptop in this cupboard. So I had it out of view because I do fundamentally think that many of us, and now I do realize with the work from home dynamics that many of us have these days, this is a little bit different, but I think about where your laptop is living when your children are around, because if it's on the kitchen table or the kitchen counter, it is talking. Even if it's closed, it's talking to you.
It's talking to you. I mean, it's the same thing with our phones, right? We got to now and I guess 20 plus years ago, we still, you weren't quite there yet with the phone being so prominent as a but we got to talk about that as a computer too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel the same way, but I literally would put my phone in a, on a charger in a cupboard for those couple hours. Now these days, it's now the remote control for our lives in our house, which makes it harder, but it's just, it's really being conscious about how our children associate technology with us and our careers in our jobs. And so it takes some discipline, but I really think that it's one of the things that when you talk about boundaries, both those that are time-based and those that are physical, really can have an impact on how our kids are viewing us, both as parents, and viewing and actually having perception of our jobs and our careers and the impact it has on them and the whether it's taking away from their time.
Of course.
That they think is theirs. And so I really feel strongly that you have to kind of really consciously think about that and build that muscle.
And I think that so many women are really worried to put that type of boundary up, you know, to make a decision. Essentially, you're saying like, make a decision about when you're not going to be working and when you're unavailable to work and then communicate that out on some level. But I know so many women get really worried about doing that. They're worried about what other people think. They're worried that the rest of their team, they're worried about the men on their team. They don't probably do that. They're worried about, you know, they're worried about the optics of all of that and being, there being kind of repercussions for that. And I'm curious, did you ever experience that? Or what are some of your thoughts to those, to the women that really fear that?
Yeah, it's interesting. No, you know, if I experienced it, I'll be honest, I was making the choice that I thought was right for me and for Grace. And for, so if it impacted my career, I'll be honest, I don't reflect back that it there was a negative impact because I set those boundaries. I think people respected the fact. Now, I was very available for much of the day. And I talk about transference of hours. So when I say I'll take a call at 9 p.m., you know, I would take a call at 9, 10 p.m. at night, no problem with my Asia colleagues and not think twice about it, you know, but at that point, Grace was asleep and, you know, it wasn't taking away from her time. And so I think, you know, I can reflect back and if there was any negative ramification, it wasn't one that I felt because also I knew that I was doing the right thing for what I needed to do to raise Grace and be present for those few hours that she did get. And so so that's, but the transference of hours is one of those kind of considerations is, you know, I was still delivering. It just may not be in the normal traditional, you know, 9 to 5 hours certain times.
Yeah. Yeah. So was there ever a pushback that you found from anyone on that as a boundary at all or any boundaries for you? Did you ever find managers or bosses or colleagues looked differently at you or made comments to you about being a mom and some of those boundaries you were trying to put in place?
You know, no, I'd say if anything, I'm thinking back, you know, I would say I was in an era where I was probably helping to define what this looked like in some respects, you know, and so if there was anything, there's reflection on, you know, we see what you're trying to do. In a positive way, not a judgment way, like you're taking 2 hours in your evening for your child. But I think, you know, understanding that in a global role with the demands that came with that, that, you know, there was, I think, probably more quiet emotional support that was coming versus questioning. Now, you know, are there times when I would travel for a week or 10 days? You know, I was gone, and as I talked about earlier. And so, you know, I did have judgment. But not from one of my colleagues. I was at the preschool when Grace was about 3 years old. And I had this young mom walk up to me and I was in my pantsuit and she was in a tennis outfit, which is fine. She was heading off to tennis. And she looked at me, she goes, "Oh, so you're Grace's mom." And I said, "Yeah, yeah." And she said, "So I understand you travel internationally." And I said, "Yeah, yeah." And she said, "Well, who's with Grace when you're on those trips?" And I said, "Well, her dad, and we have a nanny." And she's like, oh, okay. And literally that's all she turned. She turned on me and walked away. And I thought, oh.
Interesting choices you're making.
In fairness, it wasn't in the workplace that I had that. Yeah. As much as in those moments where I thought, oh, so interesting. Now on the flip side of that, I had wonderful stay-at-home moms that were incredibly supportive of what I was trying to do and to be there, you know, along the journey with me. But so no, I didn't necessarily have the judgment in the workplace as much as maybe more broadly from a societal standpoint.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, one thing that's striking me too, because as I have conversations like this with some of my clients and other working moms, I think inherent in your ability to do this is the desire is for you to feel really clear that the career path that you're on and what you're doing is actually what you want. Because there's a piece I can hear somebody listening to this and going, well, what if I don't want that? Well, that has to be an important part of this conversation is you're making that decision that you're all into the career path that you're on.
It's such an important piece of it, Rebecca. And I do talk about this in the kind of the last portion of my book. I have a lot of career reflections.
Yeah.
You know, and one of them is, you know, I do feel fortunate that I've enjoyed what I've done for my career and I've enjoyed the work. And so the trade-offs and the balancing of those two worlds was something I chose. And I was very conscious in what I chose to do. But I do think life is too short not to enjoy what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think especially if you're trying to juggle being a working parent or a working mom and, you know, have a career, you know, really giving some thought to what it is you're doing. And I always say one of my principles, enjoy what you do and do what you love. And, you know, that's really important. And I see so many people, and I talk to a lot of them, that are incredibly successful in their careers, but they actually don't enjoy it. You know, they actually don't enjoy it. And so if you're not enjoying it and you're trying to manage this juggling act of raising your children, that can feel like, you know, you're carrying a weight of, you know, something you actually don't want to carry because you're not actually enjoying this part of your life, you know, this part of the equation. And so I think
so much regret. You leave all this room for regret of your decisions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's unfortunate. I see it more often than I would like to admit. And I think that's because sometimes the definition of success may not necessarily always link to what someone enjoys in terms of what they're doing each day. Mm, and so I mentor both young, you know, kids coming out of college to, you know, young professionals to even people in my era of life that are, you know, kind of probably in the looking for the second phase of careers and things. And, you know, the one question I always say to them is, you know, what do you want to talk about every day?
Mm. Yeah.
And I actually don't think enough people in life really
stop and ask that question.
You know, and it's so funny. I can say that to an 18-year-old, a 22-year-old, 35-year-old, a 50-year-old, and ask that same question. And there's so many people who say, I've never really thought about that. And so that's one of the most important things we have to think about because, you know, from a career standpoint, if you can answer that question for yourself and come back to that question over the course of time, I think it's an important one to reflect on. And
You spend your time is how you spend your life. I mean,
That's it.
We can look at your calendar and kind of know what your life is all about based on how you're spending your time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and throughout my career, I had questions that I asked myself very consciously each year. So as part of my kind of New Year's resolution-esque era in January, I had these questions asked myself. And I said, you know, am I learning? Am I contributing? Am I challenged? Do I enjoy who I work with? Am I compensated fairly for what I'm doing? You know, can I balance the life and the juggling act in the way that I feel I need to with this role? And the final one for me was, could I travel the world? Because that was important to me. But, you know, those are the questions I asked myself. And if any of those weren't a yes.
Yeah, I want to know. Were they ever a no? And then you made adjustments?
And then I made some tweaks in terms of my career path. And so that's,
do you have an example of that? I'm just curious.
Yeah. I spent an amazing 20 years at the Coca-Cola company and loved what I did, but there was a point where I knew there wasn't another role at the company that I would want to do. And so I thought, you know, this is a point when I need to consider going and working with lots of companies, which is why I went into the consulting space. And so, there were points when I did have that moment of, okay, it's time for a change. And there are other times, you know, interestingly enough, during my career where, because of what I was trying to juggle in my personal life, and I actually went through a divorce when Grace was 7, I passed up promotions. You know, I said, this isn't the time for me to take on this new challenge because I need to focus on making sure Grace and my new life, you know, as a single working mom was going to, you know, unfold as it needed to unfold. But there's a lot to, that happens during that process as well. So I can look back on those different pivot points in life and say, it's about asking yourselves questions and also being really true to what you think you should be doing at that point. And it's not always about getting that next promotion, that next step, if it's not the right time for you for what you're trying to manage across your life.
As you look back at, I'm zeroing in on like passing up promotions, because I think this is like where a lot of listeners are at yeah. this moment, are probably yeah. making decisions mm-hmm. about career mm-hmm. choices and career opportunities and weighing it against the impact on their family and so forth. And so as you look back at that, those moments of having to make decisions to prioritize Grace and your family instead of the promotion path, do you wish there was a way you had done it differently? Or as you look back, is there something you're most proud of? I'm just really curious about those moments.
Yeah, no, actually I can look back at that distinct moment and say, there's no question I made the right call to pass mm-hmm. up that promotion. I was able to focus on Grace. I was able to do the job that I knew that I could do very well, because it was not a time for me to take on something new that required me to dig in even further on the career front. And, you know, that was, I have not an ounce of regret of passing up that promotion, not for a second. It was the right call. And, you know, other opportunities come up down the road, you know, and so a lot of times you just have to believe that maybe that wasn't the right time for that type of opportunity, but there are other things that are going to be out there for you if and when you decide that you need to pass something up like that.
And I want to pause there, because I think this is really important for everybody to hear. You have to believe that other opportunities exist for you, because I think that that's where sometimes the crux of making that difficult decision can be, if you're choosing your family over the promotion or over whatever the next challenge is in your career, is there's kind of this mindset that we have is like, we get kind of greedy for it a little bit, these yes. moments, right?
Yes.
Versus believing it's abundant. I mean, look how successful you've been in your career. Obviously, passing up those promotions didn't hurt it at all in the end, right?
Right. Well, and I think it's a long career. I mean, if you think of, you know, the path of a career, it's many decades generally. And so, you know, sometimes at that moment that you're in, you know, choosing your family and choosing what you need to do for your life is absolutely the right call. And, you know, I think life is too short to feel like you have to chase that next promotion, that next title. If in fact, at the end of the day, you're going to look back and go, wow, that wasn't the right thing for Grace and for me and for our life. I would be really sad if I were to tell you now that I took that promotion, but it was a mess. So, you know, so I do want to just think about that careers are long. You know, it's a long life we're living. It's life short and it's a long life, because I've said both in this. But from a career standpoint, there are points in your career journey where making that choice, you just have to know in your heart that that's the right thing for you to do for the reasons that you know are the right thing. Believe in it. And then also know that there will be another path will open up down the road when it's meant to open up.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think the same goes true as we think about this with you're also not married to your company. I mean, if your company is not offering you what you need in terms of managing life in the long term, it might not be the right spot for you. And it's okay to pivot out into a different company or a different path always. I think women have a really hard time with that in a way that is interesting, not a way that men don't.
Yeah. I think that I'm a very loyal person.
Yeah.
And so there's a loyalty.
Long time at Coca-Cola there.
Yeah, exactly. It's a long time. I'm a very loyal person. And so I think, yeah, there's a loyalty that a lot of us feel to places mm-hmm. and in fairness to colleagues. And I had wonderful mentors, and there's a lot of reasons that people decide to stay places for long periods of time. But I think, you know, it's interesting. My husband and then now ex-husband used to say to me, you need to think about yourself as a free agent.
Yes.
And it's an interesting saying, and one that probably early in my career I didn't do as much of. And later in my career, I learned that that was probably good advice. And, you know, it goes back to also, if you think about both how you're managing your career and how you're managing this combination of raising your children and your career, you know, I call it your working parent operating model, like how you're going to manage these two aspects is something that you have to be in kind of constant evaluation of. And as I mentioned, the questions that I asked, and so every 6 months to a year, just say, how is this going? You know, how are things working? It's not a plug and play where you put it in place and everything just goes on autopilot for the next, you know, 18 years of having your children until they go off to college.
Be fabulous. Oh my God.
But it is, it's something where you really have to, it's a really active engagement you have to have with yourself, with your spouse, if you're co-parenting, and also what your children need along the way, and also what your career needs and what your work life needs. And so it is this constant evaluation. But if you can take that as both the opportunity and the challenge, but in a positive way, not something that is, again, a weight you have to carry, mm-hmm. I think that's where then it feels more of a fulfilling path versus it's another thing you have to do.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't say more. I can't say enough about the need for evaluation and regular moments of evaluation through everything from, you know, sometimes on a weeks to months, to quarters, to years. I mean, whatever that rhythm is, it is in the reflective moment that we actually have the perspective to say, I'm enjoying this, I'm happy, I want to continue doing this or not. We actually don't really have any of that information in the moment. It's not until we take a little pause back and say, let me look at the overall and see that we can even gain that insight.
Absolutely. And that's, and again, as a working parent and a working mom, in many instances, even finding the space and time to reflect.
Yeah.
To have that conversation with yourself feels like, when am I going to do that? Yeah. And so, you know, that's another thing is I do think you have to figure out if you're needing that space, how do you create that space in your life for reflection about you? You know, well, the most important thing you can do is create a little bit of space where you have those conversations with yourself about how things are going, you know, and whether it's on a walk or, you know, whatever it is you do to kind of unplug and allow your thoughts to flow. I mean, I did a lot of my reflection at 30,000 feet as I was flying because I love that white noise up in the air. But, you know, when do you have that time to really reflect and think about where you are? I'm
glad you're saying this because I was gonna lead into this a little bit. I'm curious about your me time. Did you have me time when Grace was little and what did it look like? I mean, you gotta really be intentional in to be able to have that, I would imagine, at that
you
season
do.
Of life. What did
you
it look
do.
Like for you?
Yeah. So for me, there were a couple things that were important to me and still are to this day. I mean, I definitely think that physical activity of some type, point, whatever it looks like, you know, I'm actually a Pilates addict. So I do Pilates and I walk. I used to run a long time ago, but no more. So, but you know, a walk or Pilates is something I tried to fit in when I could. Now in the early days, that was Grace in a jog stroller, you know, and then over the course of time. And once she was actually old enough, and I used to bring her to Pilates with me and she would sit in the corner and I thought, why isn't she just doing this with me? So at age, 11 or 12, she started doing Pilates with me because I thought, let's introduce you to this. So I think it's a matter of figuring out those things that you can fit into your life. The only other thing that I tried to give myself the gift of, over the course of time, and it was to manage, you know, both the physical wear and tear of the travel and just mm-hmm. manage stresses. I did try to do a massage on a regular basis. And that was my gift to myself.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was what I felt like it allowed me to really get, you know, the toxins out of my body and just really, you know,
deep relaxation.
So I think whatever it is that you give yourself, if you think of like, what's the 1 hour a week that you're going to give yourself a gift?
Yeah.
If you think of all the hours in the week, what's the 1 hour that you, and it could be going to coffee with a friend. It could be a massage. It could be just a long walk.
That just makes you feel like a human. You know, that makes you, that isn't related to your roles in any way or what you do. It's just, this is me being a human being and fulfilling a need, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also think I was very fortunate that I really fostered my friendships, even as a working mom. Now in the younger years, it's, I do think it's harder, but as kids grow, but I try to see a friend once a week in some form or fashion, whether it was for a walk or for, you know, a dinner, whatever the case would be, because you really need that connection. You need to feel, to your point, if all you feel you're doing is raising your family and working and there's nothing else going on, you can start to resent both sides of that equation.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And so I think really figuring out, you know, what are your outlets socially, what are your outlets physically that allow you to feel like you have more going on, I think is an important part of, you know, this juggling act that we're trying to manage. And, you know, on the front of my book, there's a sculpture, as you know, and it has five balls and they represent work, family, friends, health, and spirit. And those are the five balls that we juggle in life. And, you know, work and family are obviously the two foundational ones, but how you think about how you're really managing, you know, your friends, your health, and your spirit are, I think that's the full equation. That's when you feel like you can, you know, get the fullest fulfillment, I think, out of
that you're actually like living your life, experiencing your life, you know, and not just kind of working your way through it or moving your way through it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Getting through your to-do list, right?
It's exactly. Exactly. And this, I can imagine, I can hear the voices of so many working moms that are struggling, you know, I could hear in their head, but you know, how do I get that time? And I can hear that question. And for a lot of women, they stop there. And I think that that's what I really want when women to take away as they listen to you is there is no cookie cutter way to do it. We're telling you that the priority is that you got to take some time for yourself, whatever that looks like to you. You actually have to take the moment to sit down and go, how do I make this happen? Instead of going, how do I make this happen? As if it's an esoteric question. It's like, no, if I could make it happen, what are my options for doing this? You know, for you, probably with the workout, it was like, well, I could find a babysitter. She could come with me. I could try to do this while she is napping or she's asleep. Or here are my options. The option to not do it isn't on the table. So which one am I going to do? We kind of got to get to that point.
Absolutely. And those options and what those options look like change over the course of your children's lives too, right? When they're little, you know, the options are different when they're a little bit more independent. And then obviously as they head into their own independence later. So that's why I think you have to kind of evaluate it every 6 months to a year of like, how are your options unfolding and how do you tweak them as you start to see different ways of getting that support. I also think finding support and whether it is in a spouse or a partner, if you have that in your life, and if you don't, then it's in a nanny or daycare or family support, like who is around and or neighbors. I mean, I talk about building your support network, and I think it's so fundamental for a working parent and a working mom because, you know, I leaned on all aspects of my support network over the years, and I didn't, you know, it was so important because I couldn't have done what I did without that. And I think it's something that sometimes we feel that we shouldn't ask for help. Like we should be able to do all of this on our own. And I think that's an unfortunate mindset to enter into this phase of life in, because if you feel you're supposed to do it all on your own, it's a lot. It's a lot. And I really think that if you can find those individuals in your life that are there to be support for you, some are, again, the family and friend route, some may be a nanny or a babysitter. It's even finding, you know, the neighborhood teenager who wants to make a little extra money on a Saturday and come for an hour and just play with your kids while you go for that walk, you know? Yeah. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a constant.
You're not failing if you ask for help.
Oh, gosh,
I think that's the message we hear a lot as women. I've been thinking a lot about this particular topic. I've been thinking quite a lot about how, you know, women were very empathetic. Generally speaking, we have a people-pleasing side to us. We have a feeling, you know, and we also have the message in us that says, you know, be strong and don't show those weaknesses and, you know, kind of rise up. We're still working our way as women for sure in the workplace, but then moms, you know, we're way at the bottom of the totem pole in terms of the equity, right? And so it's this feeling of failure if we can't do it all on our own. And it's the wrong message, but we still have to fight that message, you know?
I do. I think you're right. Cause it's a mindset and it's a belief that we're capable of doing it all. And that's why I say, just because we can, doesn't mean we should.
Right.
You know, you might be able to do it all. Great. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the goal, because doing it all, then you're not going to have any room for anything extra that actually allows you to feel like you're living that full life that you really would like to live.
Absolutely.
And so if you can allow yourself to believe the fact that if you ask for help, you put in the support around you, that that's going to actually allow those extra things in life that make life feel like you're living it to the fullest come to fruition. And that, I think, is what I hope for everyone, is that you don't feel like you have to do it all on your own and take everything on and not share the need with others. Because people are really happy to help if you ask them, or again, if
almost,
you need to
almost
put,
always. And if they're not, I don't know why they're in their life.
well, and it's, in fairness, you do learn over the course of time which friends. And I always say, my working mom friends were not the ones that I generally asked for help, because they were managing things the same way I was. It was, in fairness, a lot of my wonderful stay-at-home mom friends that were there for me in moments when I say, hey, I can't, you know, my nanny's sick, Rob's out of town, can you get Grace? Like, of course. Yeah, I got it. You know, and so I think it is a matter of the balance of friendships, and they all bring something to your life in different ways.
I'm so poignant, actually, because I'm just coming out of spring break. I had to ask 7 different people to help me this last spring break in order to like cobble together the childcare I needed. 7 different people.
Yeah.
and that was, you know, on some level, I can reflect on that and go like, this is ridiculous. The system is so not in my favor. What in the world? And I go, you know what? I have 7 people in my life that were very willing to help me out. And, you know, thank goodness for them. Yeah. You know, I could look at this from all sorts of angles, but it takes a village to raise our kids. And we got to lean in. We got to be a part of the village, and we got to lean into it.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing. I think accept that it does take a village, and look for those individuals that want to be part of that with you. And, you know, and then show the appreciation when they do, but also, you know, be there when, you know, the request comes from the other angle. And so, you know, it's all part of it. But I agree. It's sometimes you go, wow, it's a lot to wear all this together. But I think it's also kind of part of the, I took that on as kind of the interesting challenge. Like, okay, how are we going to do all this?
Yeah. Is there something that you really wish you would have known? If you could go back and talk to your past self and the juggling act you were going through, something that you, some wisdom you wish you could have imparted, or as you look back?
So, great question. You know, one of the things that I think, because of how we all approach our lives, I probably would have liked to have done earlier is set the boundaries that I actually set as a working parent earlier in my life.
Interesting.
And it sounds funny, but that's, so it's almost like they're like the 20-year-old self, like the 20 to 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Because I think that, I think that would have been an interesting way to have lived my 20s a little bit differently. But in terms of the thing that I share with others that I think is still something that I every day am challenged with, is that all the stuff that comes at us every day that we feel like we need to tackle, because we're in such a constant, instant response world. And, you know, it's the invitation, it's the birthday present you send, or the baby gift you send, all these things that come at us. And it's like feeling like you have to do it right then. And just like take a pause and say, you know what, that's something I'll get to, but it just might not be right now. And I, you know, setting up a way of managing I call it the incoming, you know, all the stuff coming at us in a way that it doesn't overwhelm. And I think early on in Grace's life, I didn't quite have that sorted.
Yeah.
And then
almost
over the
like
course
a system to like first funnel it in and then figure out how you were going to make a decision on if it was important, do it, delegate it, don't do it, you know.
Exactly, exactly. And so what I eventually created was what I called my Sunday list, and actually just did this yesterday. So it's a great example. And, you know, my Sunday list were all the things that are coming in that I would just say, I'm going to look at that on Sunday. And so I just put this list of things. And again, it's a myriad of things. And then I would look on Sunday and just block an hour and say, what are the things that are most important to do today? And if they weren't urgent for today, they were put on the next Sunday list.
Yeah.
And what that allowed me to do is not have those things kind of pecking at me throughout the week.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And just like niggling at you, like, oh, I'm supposed to do this and I'm supposed to do that. And so it just allowed me. So I still, to this day, and Grace has been out of the house for a number of years now, I still have my Sunday list, and it's how I manage all the stuff that comes at me. And a given week, then I'm like, you know what? I'll just think about that.
I'm going to handle that on Sunday. I'm going to handle that on. And it really does. It really quiets your brain down. It goes, oh, okay, we're going to do that on Sunday. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
You've decided the point at which you're going to make that decision or execute on that task. And so your brain lets it go, right? Because we can only hold so many things in our brain at a time, right? We have to have mechanisms to let it go.
Yeah, to let it go and to not feel like it's literally sitting there going, hey, you haven't done this. You haven't done this. So that's something that I've used. And I, early in, you know, Grace's life, I was, you know, the constant onslaught of birthday gifts and baby gifts and wedding gifts, like all that stuff, you know, just all the things that we're needing to do, respond to. And so I started that process. And I have to say, to this day, it's one of the, it's to your point, it calms the brain. For me, once I put it on my list, I joke that it's my permission to forget. And so it's on the list and I can deal with it later. So it's one of those things that I think I learned, or it's a skill I learned over the course of time, or a muscle I built, but it was definitely helpful.
Yeah. I know we gotta start wrapping it up here, but there's another question that is I'm really thinking about as I think about you imparting wisdom to those that are listening, and what's one thing you really wish more women knew about kind of the juggling act between being an executive and being in corporate life and being a mom?
I would love for women to really appreciate that this is something that is both so doable, but it goes back to what you and I talked about earlier, that to do it and to enjoy it is to really do that reflection on, are you enjoying, you know, what you go to do each day
is
when you're not with your children?
Is this what you want to do?
Yeah.
It's a reflection on that on some level, right?
On some level, because I think if you can have that conversation with yourself, then, you know, all that comes with the juggling act is absolutely worth it.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer that, you know, it's something to enjoy and to, you know, thrive in.
Yeah.
But it does take active, and we talked about this earlier, it takes active management, it takes active reflection. It is not a passive.
It's not a crock pot where you're going to set it and forget it.
Yeah, there's not a set and forget on this. There's not a set and forget mode on your career and being a working parent.
Yeah. So good. When I think back to kind of the success equation, if you will, that you've kind of given us a little bit, the evaluation I think is key. You also stated pretty early on the importance of making a decision around what is important to you and what your boundaries are going to be. That requires actually a moment of stopping and thinking about those priorities, right? You kind of have to do that first and then have a time that you're regularly evaluating that. And for you, part of that equation, success equation, was time to move your body, time for friends, time to kind of manage all of the tasks on. I mean, these are literally like, we could look at your calendar and say, these are the things that made you successful during this season of your life, probably continue to make you successful today, right? That these are the things that you prioritize and you said, they're non-negotiable to me. This is the way my life is going to go.
Absolutely.
I love it. Thank you so much for being here, Sarah. And I would love women to be able to buy this book. It's not a pocket guide. Like it's a good sized book, but it has that feel to it because you literally can just pick a topic and hear your thoughts on what it was like for you to manage that. And I love it. So how can people find this book? Tell us.
Yes. So you can go on, it's available on Amazon and all of the other booksellers around the world. And you can also go to thejugglingact.com, which is my website, if you want to contact me. And it has a bit more on the background on the book and those things. It is available. The book is available in both a paperback and an ebook, iBook, Kindle version. And so, and it is meant to be, as I mentioned earlier, and as you referenced, you know, just kind of that guide that you can reach for when you want to reflect on a specific topic. And you don't have to read it cover to cover, but it's there along the journey. And hopefully it does help all of those working parents and working moms out there to really focus on how you can thrive as a working parent and enjoy both aspects of your life, your raising your children and your career.
So good. Thank you again, Sarah. Thanks for imparting wisdom. Thanks for all you're doing in this world to help working moms figure it out. You're right. I think you are, if we look at like the whole journey of working moms in the corporate life, like you have been one of them that is paving a path a little bit for us. So I appreciate all you're doing in the world. And
Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Yes, of course, of course. All right, working moms. Until next week, let's get to it. If you wake up most days spinning with 100 different priorities vying for your attention, then the Daily Kickstart is exactly what you need. It's a simple 6-step process that helps you get your thoughts out of your head, reset your mindset, and refocus on what actually matters. It's designed to help shift you out of overwhelm and into calm, confident action before the chaos hits. This daily practice is the same tool I offer to all my clients, and it's going to show you exactly how to lead your day instead of react to it. It takes just 10 minutes a day, and the impact will ripple through everything: your mood, your energy, your presence with your kids, and how you lead at work. My clients indicate time and time again that this tool was the one that made the biggest difference for them, and I'm offering it to you totally free. You can download it by going to www.ambitiousandbalanced.com/daily-kickstart. And of course, I'll have that for you in the show notes as well. All right, working moms, let's get to it.